Thanks for joining us for Garden Talk today. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest today, Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Always great to have Barb come by. We'll talk about how the gardens are affected by the extreme weathers, the storms, and everything that's come through across the state, in various parts of the state at least. And maybe your garden suffered a little bit. Maybe your garden's doing great. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Barb, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here again.
Terrible rains up north recently. We had southern Wisconsin with some severe weather.
Severe weather last night. Certainly where I live, it came through. Where I work, it came through. Some branches down when I was coming up here, coming into Madison for the show today. I saw some, a lot of little stuff down, but also some big branches down. So,
any effects on our garden, or what about the vegetable garden?
Well, I guess the main concern I have is up north, they're concerned about root rots and some of those kinds of things where it's been flooded for so long. The bigger effect on the vegetable garden has been these extremely high temperatures, and especially the hot nights, which will cause fruit abortion. So those flowers on tomatoes and peppers and those kind of things, people may see the flowers and then they'll drop off and won't form the fruits. So where once the nighttime temperatures cool down a little bit, things will be okay again. But those high nighttime temperatures are, we think they like hot temperatures, but not high nighttime temperatures.
Okay. Well, Agnes in Boscobel has a question about her tomatoes. So maybe we should go there. Agnes, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. The problem is, now the plants look healthy, but underneath, it's a brand new raised bed. It's up about 30-some inches. And under the bottom portion was put in some completely cured compost. And it heated. And I jerked out one plant because it was just dying, and quite a while ago. And when I dug down in the soil, it was actually hot. So I poured a lot of water in there. I made little wells, and I poured a lot of water in there, and hoping that it would cool it down. Now, my plants look healthy now, but I picked two of them a few days ago that looked ripe, but the inside of them was black and hard. So I'm wondering, was that due to that extreme heat down below, and will the plants recover? They look good.
Okay. I don't know exactly what's going on where it's black and hard on the inside. That's a new one. I've certainly seen white and hard on the inside. Sometimes, especially when the temperatures get really hot, like they have been, you'll get the outside, they don't ripen evenly because of the temperatures. And so I'm wondering if that's what's going on. Where it was starting to decompose in the bottom of that new bed, hopefully it's continued to, that will continue to decompose and it won't be too hot that'll cause damage. I guess I would have just worked it into the above soil to help cool it down. I would just say at this point, I don't have any particular suggestions except wait and see what happens. I mean, you can't do much to it or make many changes at this point.
No, but I was wondering what was that, those two tomatoes. The other ones look very good, and I've got a lot of them setting on, and the plants look healthy.
Yeah, well, then I would say just kind of wait and see what happens with them.
Okay.
It's supposed to cool down a little bit, and that may take care of some of the problems.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck.
Okay,
thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. I had my first tomato from my straw bale, one of my heirloom tomatoes.
Ooh, congratulations.
I just tried to post it on Facebook, but I'm not sure I was successful there during the show here. Anyway, my tomatoes look pretty good in those straw bales.
Yeah, and we have in our demonstration garden at the in Kenosha County at the office, the ones in the straw bales, I have to say, look better than the ones that are in the raised bed because they're staying moist longer. In the, in the southeast, it's been extremely dry until last night. So, that extra moisture helps.
Ann in Presque Isle, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I have a cabin in Presque Isle, and unfortunately, I lost probably about 20 large white pines in the windstorm yesterday morning.
Oh,
oh no.
I know. Devastating. But one fell on my beautiful prairie garden and completely annihilated it. My question is, the tree has been removed from the garden, flat as a pancake, everything broken off. Do I just leave those prairie plants? Mm-hmm. Do I clean it? Do I clean it up?
Nope, leave it. That's what Mother Nature would do. So,
okay. Well, I figured, but I wasn't sure.
Yep. Yeah, I would, and unless you have stuff that's so thick that it will almost smother it, but I would think you're probably fine leaving it as is.
Okay, so if the plants die out in the fall, do I still just leave the dead growth and then just hope that something comes back in the spring? Yeah.
I would guess that, you know, we're at least far enough through the growing season now. We're getting into the end of July.
Most of beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was in bloom. Absolutely gorgeous. I know.
But many of those plants have photosynthesized enough that they should have hopefully enough stored for the root system. You'll probably get at least some regrowth yet this year.
Okay.
So some resprouting, so they will continue. And as long as there's been enough stored in those root systems, I expect most of them will come back, especially natives and prairie plants. They're really tough. I would even wait, you know, don't get into worry about replanting or doing anything. Go through another full growing season.
Yeah,
and
it sounds like a pretty established prairie. Mm-hmm. So those plants are tough.
Yep.
My fingers are crossed.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Ann. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Alan Kakana, it's your turn. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. I didn't get her name.
Oh, Barb Larson.
As the show came on. Barbara?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, I have two questions real quick. One is tomato plants in hanging pots. When I potted them, it said plant them two-thirds of the plant. Does that mean two-thirds of the root system or two-thirds of the whole plant itself? I bought them at Menards or Home Depot, one or two.
Yeah.
So that would be two-thirds of the plant down deep. So because tomatoes are a vine, if you plant them, if you pull off some of the lower leaves and plant not only the root system but part of the stem underground or in the soil, they will actually root along there too. So that's why many people plant their tomatoes a little bit deeper or even dig a trench and plant at least the lower part of the stem in the soil.
And is there a pot size that would be minimal for those? I just got a regular, probably a 10 or 12 inch hanging basket with dirt in it, with potting soil.
If it's listed for a pot grown tomato or a hanging basket tomato, that should be fine. What you'll have to really watch is you'll probably have to water it every day. So make sure you keep it moist, but don't let it completely dry out.
Yeah, that's the issue. Okay, second question real quick. I have about a 300-square-foot backyard that's completely in shade because of a neighbor's maple tree. And I need what is a good low-growing ground cover? I can't plant anything back there. Grass will grow, but I don't want to pull with it. I just want a ground cover. Cover because in the fall I get all the leaves from his tree onto that area, and there's no shade. It's all shade 90% of the day.
Okay.
So there are a number of different shade ground covers. Everything from, and I remember I actually had this question, I think last spring, and somebody called and said, don't recommend this one or that one or that kind of thing. Look around, see the different kinds that you might be interested in. There's everything from the pachysandras. The problem is things that are kind of standard that we've used for a long time, vincas and ajugas, can get kind of aggressive. And so some some people are really concerned about using those. I mean, they take longer. Another standard would be the hostas. They don't fill in quite as much, but certainly people use that. You may want even a combination of things. There's also, if you like that little grassier look, some of the sedges are shade tolerant, mm-hmm. and they give a grassy look. They don't have to be mowed, so that's another alternative. So I would look around, see what you like the looks of, and, you know, when you're planting that much, you may even want to consider what's cost and even do a couple of different places and different kind of looks to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so ivy would ivy be a good...
Yeah, ivies are, there are some hardy ivies that would work, so that's a possibility too. I would do a combination of things. Is it, sometimes under maples you can get dry shade too, so that would be the other, is how moist is it versus how dry.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, great. Thank you very much
okay.
for your help, and Larry, you always enjoy the show. Thanks, again.
Thanks, Al. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Mary and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you can give me advice on how to... the best way to get rid of bed straw. I actually bought a small plant at a nursery one time. They said, oh, yeah, the real pretty yellow flowers, but it kind of took over everything. And now I'm reading about it, that it's kind of, you know, I can tell it's noxious weed. How do I get rid of it?
So it's bed straw where it stick. If you pull off a leaf, it sticks to whatever?
I don't notice that it's that sticky, but that was what I remember, was the little tag in it, and it looks like the pictures that I see online.
Okay. All right. So the first thing I always try to figure out is, first of all, to identify it so you know for sure what it is. And then we know whether or not we're dealing with an annual or a perennial. So the kind of weed-type bed straw, if I remember correctly off the top of my head, is more seed-borne or an annual, so that sometimes you can control that just by preventing it from going to seed and getting it pulled out early on. If it's a perennial, though, then you're looking at either hand-pulling it out and being very careful and just continuous about that. Is it mixed in with other desirable plants?
Yes. I do have some. It was a, you know, perennial garden.
Okay. All right. So the organic or the low input way is hand pulling if it's a perennial. If you don't mind using an herbicide, you can very carefully shield your desirable plants and use something like glyphosate on it. If it's a broadleaf weed, there are also broadleaf weed controls, and it would probably be that. But I would start first getting it definitely identified so you know what you're dealing with. And you're in Eau Claire, so I would take it. There is a horticulture educator in Eau Claire, Erin, and take it into the Eau Claire office and have her ID it for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb Larson, our guest today, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Friday on Garden Talk, we'll be talking about the lily leaf beetle that has been found in parts of Wisconsin, and also take your general gardening questions. Right now, though, visiting with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. And we'll turn right back to the phones and to John in Muscadet. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much. I want to rebuild my strawberry patch, but I want to is it okay if I pull all those strawberries out and store them over the winter before putting them in the ground again?
The
and
plants,
how would I do that?
The plants, I don't think they're going to store over winter. You're going to have to. So if you go on the UW Extension Learning Store website, we have a really nice publication called Growing Strawberries in Wisconsin, and it will tell you how to renovate your strawberry patch. So basically you get rid of the old mother plants and you save the daughter plants, and it actually should be done every, I think, about 3 or 4 years anyway. So
that's exactly where I'm at.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So
if I rebuild the patch and then pull them out before winter and put them in the ground, it should be okay.
Yeah, you've got to put them back in the ground. You can't overwinter them dormant. So
okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Don in Cottage Grove. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for sharing your expertise. My Silver Queen is tasseled, and the ears are forming. Unfortunately, the Japanese beetles are attacking the corn silk in amazing numbers. Is there a product or something I can do other than just simply pick them off?
Usually the best way to do it, especially if there's a particular plants or a small amount that you can do, is to hand pick them. It's much more, believe it or not, it's more efficient to do it that way.
Okay.
If you have a large landscape, you can also, in conjunction with that, if you can put a trap in the equivalent of about a block or so away. Now, anybody that lives in a regular size urban or suburban landscape, you can't do that because they will draw more to the trap than what you would have normally. So,
yeah, like the mosquito magnets.
Right, right. Yeah. So normally I do not recommend traps unless, as I said, you've got a big enough landscape that you can pull them away from your desirable plants. And you've got an area where you can say, okay, this is the sacrificial area. But otherwise, I say go out in the morning and go out in the evening with your little container of soapy water and flip
them
into
in there.
Yeah. Soapy water doesn't kill them, but they drown faster that way.
Right. After they're drowned, can we feed them to the chickens, or would the soapy water not be a good idea to do that?
Oh, I'm not a chicken expert.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Won't do it anyway. That's a question.
Yeah. By the way, chickens are a great control for Japanese beetle, but they can't get them up there on the corn silks, can they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're great for the potato bugs and the beetles that are on the potatoes, but yeah, they don't fly.
So maybe you could even don't knock them off into soapy water, just knock them off into regular water. And
sure.
Then give them to the chickens.
Oh, we'll do it that way then.
Sure, why not?
As long as we get rid of them.
Yep.
Hey, thanks an awful lot. I really appreciate it. Great show.
Thanks, Don. Thanks a lot for calling. And, yeah, just regular water. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I just recommend soapy water because it's harder for them to get out, and they tend to die a little faster. But as long as you can keep them in there or whatever, wherever you want to put them, just keep them confined.
Abraham in Elkhorn, thanks for calling. Hello.
Good morning. I have half a dozen Anna kiwi plants, and I've been told that I need to have a male plant, and I've been told I don't need a male plant with that variety, so I'm trying to find out if I do need a male plant to produce fruit.
Okay, and I can give you the general answer. I would have to look up if there's something different about that specific cultivar, but the general answer is, yes, you do need males. So you would need a male plant. Without looking it up, I couldn't tell you whether or not that particular variety has been bred to have both male and female on it. That's pretty unusual. Most of the time, you're going to have, when they're that way, you have
I'd
to have
two
of them.
I'd put a male plant in there.
Yeah, I would too. The other is that usually if you get cross-pollination in any plants, you get better fruit production anyway.
Yeah. All right. Any idea where you might find a male?
I would look mail order.
Mail order. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. You could check with a local nursery.
You could, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. Ron in Fall Creek, thanks for calling. Hello.
Yes. Hello there. How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
We're new to the area and got a little 16 acres here. And
We had strawberries planted, and we fertilized them last fall. And the berries we got, maybe 10 or 15%, were fully developed. And the rest of them just looked like they were kind of puckered up in the bottom, and, you know, they didn't develop to be much of anything at all. And I have one more question. After you finish with that.
Okay.
So did you see any insects in there?
No, no insects, just not developing very properly.
Okay. Just because there's some of the stink bug and some other insects that can feed on those strawberries and cause that kind of distorted look to them. So I'm wondering if that's what was wrong. The other would be improper pollination. We're seeing that seems to be more of an issue nowadays than it used to be. And so if it's has the patch, we talked with the gentleman earlier that was looking at renovating his patch. It could be that the patch needs to be renovated too for better production. So I think there's several things you're going to have to look at this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we were wondering if the fertilizer wasn't right. We put 13, 13, 13 on.
Well, in general now, we don't recommend those kinds of, you know, 13, 13, 13, 10, 10, 10, like we did for years. Because at this point, most of our soils don't need the extra phosphorus and potassium, which are the second two numbers on it. So we generally recommend a soil test so that you know what you're working with to begin with.
Yeah.
So I would have a soil test, take a soil test, and you can send it to the UW Soils Lab, which is in Marshfield, or you can send it to another commercial lab. They will tell them you're growing strawberries, and they'll give you recommendations for it. And then I would also get to that Growing Strawberries in Wisconsin publication from the UW Extension Learning Store, and it will fill you in on how to properly fertilize and care for your strawberries.
Okay, sounds very good. And the other second question I had is, we were inundated with thistles, and the purple flowers are out now, and I was wondering if you just cut the heads off, will they come back next year, or do you have to get rid of it?
Yeah, most
Canada thistle. That sounds like Canada thistle.
Could be Canada. That's probably most likely it's Canada thistle, and if it is, it is a really has a deep root system. It's a perennial, and it comes back from the roots. But you'd still want to try to prevent seed production if you can.
Okay.
Yeah, and I try to pull out as much as you can. Mulch areas and just keep after it. It's just I've had lots of problems with thistles the last few years.
Yeah. Well, there's two types. One is looks like a tree. It's got a stalk and it's got big round.
Yeah, that sounds like Canada,
that's Canada thistle. And that's the worst kind.
Yeah, and that's very difficult to control.
Okay.
And usually requires herbicides to control it.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. You have a wonderful show, and we tune it in every week.
Ah, thanks, Ron. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, that Canada thistles was just one of those, you know, you either if you're not going to use glyphosate or something.
Yeah, if you don't use some sort of herbicide or even repeated use of herbicide, sometimes it's almost impossible to totally control it, especially in gardens and stuff, so.
Chuck in Wisconsin Dells will turn to you now. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for having me. Say, I on them Japanese beetles, I got a little dust buster battery operated, and it's got a kind of a clear plastic snout on it, so you can see what you got there. But I go up and down, and it's like on the beans and the corn and stuff, and just suck them up with that dust buster.
That's a great idea.
I've seen in catalogs where they've even had specialty ones for insects rather than just even a standard dust buster.
Yeah, so this is a little Ryobi battery operated, and I got, you know, all the tools that use the same battery. So.
Yeah. Yep. Well, as long as it doesn't put so much suction on it that it damages the plant, that sounds great.
Right. You got to be a little bit careful, but you know, I mean, you keep it. Three-quarters of an inch and away, you know, I mean, it'll suck them up. You know.
That sounds like a great idea.
Thanks,
yeah, it's
Chuck.
It's a lot easier. Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, appreciate that call.
It's harder for them to fly away that way, because that's the other problem. When it's this warm, they'll fly on you.
Yep. Keith in Wisconsin Dells, thanks for calling. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. Great show today.
Thank you.
So my question for your expert is, I have a garden. It's probably a, I'd say a 50 by 40 size garden. This year I imported my own dirt in there. I have real sandy soil in the dell that's common. And I brought in Miracle-Gro black dirt for gardens. I put in about 50 bags. And what I did was I planted my cucumbers. My cucumbers, I have one vine and three patch. The problem I'm having is my cucumbers, the patches are turning yellow. Now, I'm picking them soon enough, and they don't taste better. It doesn't matter if I pick them when they're little or if I pick them when they're big. They're turning yellow on me. And I'm trying to figure out why, and maybe you can help me out.
So the cucumber fruits are turning yellow, or the leaves are turning yellow?
The fruits, the actual cucumber.
That's a so many, many years ago, I'll tell you a quick story here. When I was a brand new undergrad horticulture student, I thought, oh, I got this really strange cucumber. So I took it into my professor, and I said, what's going on with this cucumber? And he said, haven't you ever seen a ripe cucumber? Yeah, I was very embarrassed. So those are fully ripe. We eat cucumbers green. And so those are fully ripe cucumbers. So you're just going to have to pick faster.
Well, thank you. And it says, but you know, the research I did, it said that they would taste better, but they don't taste better when they're yellow. I mean, not to me anyhow. And then nobody in my family, they like to taste them. Now the ones on the vine, they're green. No matter how big they get, they're green. Maybe it's just a different type.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah, okay. And they've okay. been bred to, you know, stay green longer okay. So rather than ripen quickly. The only one that's kind of a yellowish color is there are the ones that are called the lemon cucumbers, and they are a yellowish color.
Okay.
But the others, yeah, just make sure you pick them when they're green.
Sure, and then just one more quick question. I saw my tomatoes, on my tomato plants now, I'm having an issue with, I don't know what they're actually called. They call them earwigs. They're all over my tomato plants, and I don't like to use any type of insecticide or anything on there. Is there anything else I can do? Is there any household stuff I can spray on there, vinegar, anything that won't hurt my tomatoes that I can deter these pincher bugs or the earwigs from going on?
Okay, so they're the ones with the pinchers on them, right?
Yes.
Okay. My favorite thing to do for earwigs is to get, like, either a cottage cheese or similar size container. Fill it about halfway with soy sauce. Then pour just enough vegetable oil so you have a layer or a skim layer of vegetable oil on top of the soy sauce. Put that out in your garden. It's a trap. The earwigs are attracted by the soy sauce. They crawl into the container. They drown in the soy sauce. You put the oil in so that they can't crawl out because it's slippery. And it works really well. You're going to have to dump it out or redo it probably every couple of nights because you'll get these kind of fermented, gross earwigs in there. But it works really well.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see. Let's go to Katrina in Wanakee next. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment about the Japanese beetles. I've had success in repelling them from my garden by using a one-gallon pump sprayer and adding 2 tablespoons of Epsom salt and spraying down the plants in the area. Seems to repel them without killing them.
Hmm.
Okay, that never heard of that one.
I haven't either. I'd think the salt would be a problem over time.
Well, the plants seem to love the magnesium.
Well, it's the magnesium. They mind that, and you're applying it. So they're, although magnesium deficiency is pretty unusual for us, so
yeah,
that wouldn't be. If you know, there are a number of different remedies out there, things that. And over the years, I've talked to the entomologists, the researchers, because they've done so much research on Japanese beetles. And what's been really kind of weird about Japanese beetles is What seems to work for one person in one yard doesn't work someplace else. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen, other than what we already have, we haven't seen a lot of variation on what we can do. So, for example, they know that geraniums make, if a Japanese beetle eats some of the geraniums, there's something in that that kind of almost makes them drunk or high. And so for a while, they were looking at, can we come up with something that would be a biological insecticide or something that we can use, or even a repellent? But it's just not consistent. So that's why we haven't seen anything like that. So I would say this is in that, if it works in your yard, it doesn't damage your plants, great. But I don't know how well it'll work for other people. So
yeah, there you go. Thanks, Katrina.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate the call. And from Katrina, we go to Christina in Glenwood City. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hi there, thank you. I am sitting out here right next to my potted garden, and I have two questions. I'm in this garden, I've got collards, kale, and chard that I've noticed some issues with. One of them, some kind of critter is nibbling on them because the leaves actually have like little holes. So I'm wondering, what can I put on them that would be environmentally safe?
So the most common thing we find are one of the cabbage worms. And I'm wondering if that's what you've got in there. So I would look for little tiny holes that way. There's another, we've seen a lot of flea beetle damage. So I think before I'd recommend any kind of thing, you need to look and see what you can, if you can find any worms, any little critters, anything like that. And then you could try to control it that way. And that's the most environmentally friendly way to kind of control things anyway, is to try to, you know, find them and just physically remove them.
Okay, then the other question would be, some of the plants seem like they're really getting really dry on the perimeter and turning, just like a light gray color, and that seems to move towards the inside of the plant. Any idea what might be causing that? I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see anything on it. But again, the ends are very dry and discolored.
So by saying the perimeter, you're saying the edges of the leaves or
the
outer leaves on the plants? The edges of the leaves.
Yep.
And you've got these all in containers?
In containers, yeah.
Okay. And what's your kind of watering regime here?
I check them every morning to make sure. I like to water in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get those droplets throughout the day to cause a mold or something. But with our heat, sometimes I've had to, give them just a little splash in the afternoons or later in the day to make sure they don't start wilting.
Okay. And you have holes in the bottom of the containers?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I didn't... Sometimes I always have to check. So, and then, so you're watering to keep the soil moist, but not too wet.
Right.
Okay. You may even want to be just a little careful in that late afternoon watering, because plants will naturally, especially in this hot, sunny weather, will wilt a little bit about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And because they can't keep up with they can't take up water fast enough to keep up with the rate of photosynthesis.
Right.
So I always suggest waiting until about 7 o'clock at night. And if they perk back up, you probably don't need to do that late afternoon watering.
Okay.
So it's possible that it could be, a water flow, either a little too dry, a little too wet. Otherwise, I don't think if it's dry on the edges, brown on the edges, that doesn't sound like a nutrient deficiency or anything like that. It sounds more like a watering issue.
Okay. All righty.
Well,
thank you so much for your help today. Appreciate it.
It's tricky. I mean, watering is hard in any garden. especially when we have these kinds of, we're back to those weather extremes where it's really wet or really dry and trying to know how much or what to do. But particularly I find with containers, it's really tricky because the container, every container is different. The size of the pot is different. As those roots get bigger, they take up more space. And so yeah. it's really tricky to do them.
Thanks again, Christina. Appreciate it. And we'll turn to Joe and Viroqua next. Hi, Joe. Well, let's see. We'll get you on here. Thanks for calling.
My daughter lives just west of Baraboo, and she's got a rose hedge. And the Japanese beetles love to eat those roses up.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I get either a pop bottle or, better yet, a fruit bottle with a bigger neck. And these beetles, they either fly away when you approach them or they drop to the ground. Well, I put the bottleneck right under, opening right underneath the beetles and encourage them to drop into that bottle. And I probably get half of them that way.
That's good.
And you leave them in the bottle, they can't fly out because of the net. It's too narrow. They can't fly in that confinement. And they just die in the bottom of the bottle.
Okay.
There you go. The bottle method.
I swear there's as many ways to control Japanese beetles as there are people that have them.
Thanks a lot for calling, Joe. You can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. And to get there, the title of the page is The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we take a look at your garden with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show or email us at talk@wpr.org. Joan and Madison up next with a question. Hi, Joan.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your program tremendously.
Thank you.
I put Epsom salts around my roses. I've heard that's very good for them. I've been doing it for a while. How often should I do that?
Well, since I don't recommend doing it, I wouldn't have a recommendation for
Why?
You.
Why?
So it's a very common recommendation to put Epsom salts around roses. So you're adding manganese, or I'm saying magnesium, thank you. And if you don't have a deficiency, you don't need to add it. And that's rarely a deficiency for us. So, I mean, it's one of those things, if you think your roses are growing better by it, with it, fine, it's not hurting anything. But as far as how often to do it and that kind of thing, you'll have to ask one of those rose growers that recommends it.
I usually put it in the spring and then leave it. What about other flowers? Can you use, I guess it all depends on your soil, right?
And again, why do it if you don't need to do it?
True. Yes. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks
for calling.
Amy in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I've got tomatoes that are getting blossom end rot.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you had any suggestions on organic methods to help me deal with it so I can enjoy my tomatoes.
So blossom end rot is a problem. It's a calcium deficiency in the fruits. It's
okay.
Usually for us, because we rarely have calcium deficient soils, the problem is that the calcium doesn't move easily through the plant. It tends
okay.
to stay in the leaves in the older parts of the plant and doesn't move out into the fruits. So that's why you get the calcium deficiency in the fruit. That is exacerbated by when we have poor water movement through the plant.
Okay.
So our recommendation is always to try to keep the soil evenly moist. So when we have these kinds of weather, like we I see you're in Milwaukee, so, you know, when we get this, when it gets so dry and we try to keep it watered and it tends to go from wet to dry to wet to dry, the water flow isn't consistent and then blossom end rot is a lot worse. So
okay.
Use soaker hoses or other kinds of things to keep it so that it's moist. mulch. I don't know if you have your tomatoes mulched or not, so use an organic mulch of some type. That will help keep the soil moist longer.
Okay.
Those kinds of things. And the good news is there, it's always worst on the first tomatoes, and usually it kind of outgrows it.
Yeah, I haven't had blossom end rot in years since I started with straw bales.
No, I knew Larry was going to say, so put them all in straw bales.
I tell you.
Mine are in containers, so I wasn't sure. I've heard Epsom salts before, too.
Because it's a calcium deficiency. And in containers, we go back to, containers are even trickier to keep moist. So
right.
That's where
I don't use them anymore.
Yeah, that's why it is a little more challenging. The other is you may want to try some different varieties of tomatoes, because some are much more prone to blossom end rot than others are.
Okay, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Get a straw bale.
She may not want that on her patio with the straw bale.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They're not the most beautiful things to see.
You know, the little tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes and everything, it's really rare in those, too. So that's another way to kind of cheat it.
Oh, man. Jimmy in Valley Junction, thanks for calling.
Morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a pretty good garden, but I have trouble growing anything below the ground, like carrots or any tuber-type plants. You got any suggestions? It's something that might... Do I need some kind of different fertilizer? Am I deficient in something?
So tell me what happens so that you have trouble. Do you have... do they just not develop where you don't get the radishes and carrots that develop? You only get tops on it?
Tops, yep.
Do you put a lot of nitrogen fertilizer on there, or like fresh manure or something?
No. It was formerly had horses but that's been years and years ago.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let's see, radishes like cool temperatures. You're planting those in the early spring?
Well, maybe that's my issue.
Yeah, radishes will not really form up, or they'll be really hot, tend to be problematic. They'll shoot up their flower stalks once we get into hot weather. Radishes are, and carrots too, although carrots have a much longer time for them to mature, but both of those like to be planted in fairly early in the spring in those cool temperatures. And then you can replant. What would I suggest as to when?
Yeah.
Late April, early May. I don't know where Valley Junction is, so I don't know how far north you are.
Down by Toma.
Oh, okay. Then I would say, late April, early May at the latest. And then you can also replant, especially the radishes, in September.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, cool temperatures.
All right, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thanks for calling. And Barb in Wauwatosa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I was calling about purslane, which is this basically a weed that's growing in my vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little red vine, and every time we pull it, it comes back. And I'm just wondering if it might inhibit germination, or if it is, you know, prone to choking stuff out, or do I really have to worry about it?
You don't have to worry about it unless it's growing so thickly that it outcompetes your vegetables. Purslane, so certain people actually like purslane and eat it.
Yeah, I have heard that, yeah.
It has a very green flavor to me. So it's, you know, it's one of those, it depends on whether you like the taste of it or not. Purslane is an annual, so it comes back from seed every year. So you can, and it's fairly shallow rooted, so you can just... use a hoe or just pull it off that way and try to keep it from forming. It has little tiny flowers, but you want it to keep from seeding. And then the other is that you may want to make sure you mulch your vegetable garden early enough so that it will help prevent those seeds from germinating, from it coming up from seed. Or you can use one of the pre-emergents. If you like the organic, you could use corn gluten. The problem is if you have a vegetable garden, then you can't grow seeds from that. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Barb. Yeah, thanks for calling. And Rob in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I have a question about zucchini and yellow squash. I've had a problem with plant bugs, and then it looks like other types of beetles sucking on the stems, and then the plants lose vigor and kind of die. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestions for that.
So it does sound like, do they look like brown box elder bugs?
Kind of. They look like a true bug, I guess,
yep.
You would call them.
Yep. Yeah, then it's probably squash bugs. And yes, they. I see you're in Kenosha. For some reason, Kenosha seems to be a hotbed. I frequently get squash bug questions or calls. I would say at this point, it's more hand control them. Look for the eggs, which are kind of an orangish on the underside of leaves and things, to try to squash those or scrape them off with your fingernail. Try to control those young nymphs. And then what you'll want to do in future is try to use something like floating row cover until they start to bloom, and then you have to uncover them, which also will keep off things like the cucumber beetles that carry cucumber wilt.
Okay.
And also the squash vine borers, which are a real problem on zucchini.
Yeah, so, I think maybe I have like a couple of different things going on.
Yeah, would probably.
To skip maybe a year of zucchini and not grow them in my garden?
Well, I mean, they're zucchini. I would, another option, especially with things like squash vine borer, which loves zucchini, is to grow another summer squash instead of zucchini. And there are lots of other really good quality summer squash that taste very similar.
Okay.
So, and then make sure you rotate and do good cleanup, but always for a lot of these vegetable garden insects, I suggest floating row cover.
And what is that? I'm not familiar with it. I'm sorry.
Floating row cover. It's like a spun polyester kind of fabric, very thin. And you cover the plants early in the spring or after early summer, after you get them planted. It is a physical barrier, so it keeps the insects out. Now, because squashes are bee pollinated, once they start to bloom, you have to uncover them so that the bees get in and out. But it really cuts down on a lot of the insect problems.
And it's cheap.
And it's cheap, yeah.
And you can pick that up at like a Menards or a garden center?
Some of the garden centers, certainly some of the better garden centers carry it. Depending on the amount you want, you can also buy big rolls of it even from horticulture supply places.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Tim in River Falls, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Out of ignorance, I made a major mistake that basically has destroyed my garden. It's a small garden, 12 by 50, and it's always been very, very productive for neighbor's vegetables. This year, nothing wanted to come up. Spinach and lettuce wouldn't even come up, and the carrots and beets came up like an inch and fell over dead. And so I started asking around, trying to figure out what had happened. And it turned out last year we had two locust trees cut down and the brush and the branches and everything hauled away. When they ground the stumps, I thought, well, this is good organic matter. And I took all the chips from the stump grinding and rototilled them deeply into my garden.
Ooh.
I've been told now that made it a killing zone for years and it takes all the nitrogen out of the soil to decompose the chips.
Yeah, it does take a lot of the nitrogen out of the soil. So I wouldn't say you're out of luck for years, but you are going to have to probably add a lot of nitrogen in there to help get those decomposed in there. My other concern when you said they just kind of all fell over, and I know up in some areas it's really wet. By any chance, could, especially with those smaller plants, if it was when they were really young, could it have been one of the root rots or something like that?
No, the ends of the rows where I hadn't put the chips were, you know, the beans were a foot and a half tall, and in the middle they were 6 inches tall and yellow.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then.
I dressed the rows with high nitrogen fertilizer, and actually the beans will come up enough. We've harvested a couple harvests of beans. The area where the beets and the carrots were, I rototilled them all under and then put on equivalent to 100 pounds an acre of nitrogen, and replanted since, and they are coming up. I'm just curious how many years it's going to take me and what's the best way to try and recover.
I think
their advice was move my garden. I don't have a place to move it to.
No, I wouldn't move the garden. I think you're doing exactly what you need to do, which is to add nitrogen into it, and that's what you're working on. And I would just continue to kind of work that in. I'd work some more in the fall, try to get those to decompose. Depending on how much you put in and how big those chips, you know, those little sawdust pieces were, it may not be that many years. So don't give up.
These chips were probably 1.5 inches long and 3/8 of an inch thick.
All right.
Stump grinder, but so I'll just heavily fertilize the nitrogen, put on high nitrogen compost, and bring it back as quickly as I can.
That's the best approach. We had an email about white bee balm. The emailer said, "Have you heard of white bee balm? I'm wondering if the seed will come true. Is it a cultivar or a wildflower?"
So I would say it would be a cultivar. Bee balm is a native or a wildflower, but the native bee balm or Monarda is pink. So this would be a cultivar. Whether it comes back from seed white again, you're going to have to just try it and see what happens. Often they don't, but, you know, sometimes, who knows?
And with bee balm, if I'm not mistaken, isn't bee balm a powdery mildew?
It can be. So that's one of the things when they choose with cultivars, they're usually looking for ones that are resistant to powdery mildew. So if it's healthy looking,
let's see. Tom in Wanakee emailed to ask if he can prune his dogwood shrubs right now, or should he wait, or what should he do?
No, he should wait until fall. We really don't want to do any pruning on trees and shrubs, especially pretty extensive pruning in late summer, because it actually stimulates regrowth that won't harden off for wintertime. So wait until fall, until the leaves drop.
So September maybe, or
I
October?
Would wait until October, because you can see what you're doing better, too.
Yeah, there's some truth to that as well. Barb Larson, our guest today, isn't always fun to talk with her. Barb is a horticulture educator. She works with UW Extension in Kenosha County. She's been with us for how many years? A long time now.
I don't want to talk about it.
It's always great to have her on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on this edition of Garden Talk as we visit with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along. Open lines, call in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Gary in Mellon has a question for you, Barb, so let's go to Gary. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I have a raised flower bed, and I have cone flowers, then Stella Diora, and bee balm. Well, it just is completely overgrown. What's the best way to pare it down so it's not so overgrown?
Well, if they've all been in there for a while, they're probably ready to be divided anyway. So this fall, or you could do it early in the spring after they just start to come up, dig them up, throw out the old, usually it's in the center part, the old part of the plant, split them into sections and replant whatever the amount is you want, and they should fill back in a few years. But it's just dividing them, I think, is the best way to control them.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And by the way, I finally, after multiple tries, have posted on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show my first ripe tomato of the year, which was really funny because I had friends over for dinner. And so I took the tomato. This is just like 3 days ago. Took the one tomato and sliced it up into four slices. So we each had one slice.
Good thing you didn't have a bigger group.
And there's a photo of part of my straw bale garden along the house with tomatoes, and then the far right portion of it, there's a couple of pepper plants kind of sticking out there. So anyway, if you want to see my first ripe tomato of the year, it's an heirloom. Giant, I forgot the name. Foreign country name. I can't think of it now. Anyway, it was tasty, and I could post, if anybody's interested, I have them all marked. I keep the little plastic. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Identification thing. So
then you know what to plant next year because you know what you like.
And I usually try something new always, mm-hmm. too, at least one new one every year. So, yep. Jim in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Say, I got tomato plants, and I've been having a problem. The bottom of the leaves are turning brown on them. The bottom of the plant is starting to die, but the leaves are turning brown.
Yeah.
Just wondering what I can put on them to, if it's going to hurt them or if I should spray them with something.
Well, I'm guessing, do you see any, before they start to turn brown, are you seeing any spots on those leaves to begin with?
Some.
Yeah.
Some
Yeah, that's pretty typical. It's normal this time of year where there's a couple of leaf spot diseases that start from the bottom and work their way up. Pull off those affected leaves unless you don't want to pull too many off, and get rid of them. Get them completely out of the garden. Don't put them in your compost pile. Make sure you keep the plants as dry as you can. You're up north enough so it's been so wet that may be problematic. Put in organic mulch so you reduce the rain splash. That'll splash up on the lower leaves. And the other is to try to keep those leaves as dry as you can, improve air circulation through them and that kind of thing. So it may be not this year, but sometimes I find if you have this problem year after year, you may want to go to staking instead of caging your tomatoes because there's a little more air movement through them. It helps keep the leaves a little bit drier. There are fungicides. They're preventative, and I don't know. Usually you can get enough production out of your tomatoes that most people I wouldn't even recommend a fungicide for, but there are some. They'd have to be labeled for tomatoes and for the leaf spots.
All right.
But I would say just take care of them the other ways.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm.
Get rid of those leaves.
Yeah, get rid of the leaves and try to keep the leaves dry.
Zach in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Zach.
Hey, guys. I have a question regarding when I should plant my garlic this fall. I'm in Brookfield. And what varieties might you suggest that would be good for Wisconsin?
Okay, so they're planted usually August, September, and I'm sorry, I am not a garlic expert, so I can't tell you which varieties. I would try, you know what, this is like anything, a lot of these others, you know, it's many of these plants, it depends on taste, so try two or three types. You know, Larry was just talking about the different kinds of tomatoes. Try two or three varieties and see which ones you like. And I would try a combination of hard necks and soft necks. I've had gardeners that swear by the Recumbelae type varieties, and they just think they are the best thing in the world. But there are other people that like other varieties. So,
you know, I saw a tip for garlic. If you get a recipe that calls for sautéing the garlic, mm-hmm. This Italian chef who's been doing it for forever said she always starts her garlic in a cold pan, and the same with her onions. And because then they heat more slowly and the flavors come through better.
Ooh.
So she starts hers in a cold pan, which
so
I'm now
go.
Going to do.
So now we have cooking tips, too.
Yeah. Well, I saw
which
that
is
garlic
all part of it.
And I thought, Zach, try that in the cold pan when you get some garlic.
Will do.
All right. Thanks a lot.
So try different ones and then let us know what you like, Zach.
All right. Appreciate it. Pete in Black River Falls, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I plant foldings, and I have them. Poles are 7 feet tall. It's a bicycle wheel. The problem is that once it reaches the top, it just keeps on growing, and I get such a ratchetness up here. It's so hard to
We're losing you, so yeah. But I think we've got the story here. We've got pole beans that are growing beyond 7 feet where the pole is, and then they turn over, and I know all about this,
yeah.
And they're a rat's nest.
But if you clip them off, they stop production. Then you're going to eventually, you're not going to produce. You're not going to get as many. So it's that you have to decide, what do you want to do? Maybe find a bigger trellis to spread them out on or something. I'm not sure.
I don't know what else you can do on that, Pete. I'm sorry we lost you there. But I hope you were able to hear that.
Yeah. But I wouldn't cut them off because you're just not going to have as many beans.
Gary and Krivitz up next. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. I have a quick question, I suppose. My wife and I purchased a house which had been the house and grounds in disrepair for a couple of years. The bank owned it. Anyway, I haven't gotten around to the front garden until this year, and everything had just been overgrown and full of weeds and everything. And there were rose bushes, which the year that we moved in, there were a few blooms on it, but they had already gotten to the point where, the stems are like 6 feet, 7 feet long. And by this year is out probably about 8 or 9 feet, just wild shooting everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and we had no blooms this year. And I knew that was probably part of the problem, but I apparently didn't do my research and I clipped them down to about 3.5-4 feet tall. About a month and a half ago, which I think is the wrong time of year for that. But I just wondered if I should just scrap, just pull them out and start over fresh with a new garden, or if those would recover and begin blooming again and looking like roses again.
I think they will recover and bloom again. You may want to first try to figure out what kind they are, but I'm guessing they're some of the old-fashioned ramblers or that kind of thing, which have those really long canes on them. Those flowers, as you found out, if you cut them in the spring, you're going to lose the flower buds on them. So they're on that two-year cycle. So the canes that grow out this year will bloom next year. So I would treat these, and often these are treated like a lot of our shrubs, where you cut the biggest, oldest, thickest canes or stems off at the ground line or as close to the ground as possible and encourage some of that new growth. And it may take a year or two before you get bloom again. But I think... let's see. Yeah, you might get bloom even if you cut them off a month and a half ago. But next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I should, then on the longest, thickest ones, I should cut them right down at ground level?
Yep, right.
And I should do this in the fall then?
Yeah, you can do it in the fall or you can do it in the early spring.
Okay.
So, and it's just because then you can see what you're doing without the leaves and everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are where the cane borers and that kind of thing are. But you still want to leave some of those middle-sized ones and the smaller ones to kind of renovate or redo the shrubs.
Okay. And I have also seen people, I know nothing about roses, but I've seen people like wrap them to sort of hold it all together. Should I do that
they're often kind of trained or wrapped onto a trellis or a gazebo or something like that to keep them up off the ground. It kind of depends on what look you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, they're just growing like right next to the house or right in front of the house. There's no trellis or anything attached to them. That's why they're just shooting off in every direction.
Yeah. And if you don't mind that look, that's fine. If you don't like the look, then, put them on a trellis or even move them.
Mm-hmm. There we
go. Okay. Well, I don't mind the look. So,
okay.
All right. I just wondered if that was something that, should be done or.
No. Some of this is if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you like
all
the
right,
way
well,
it looks,
thanks.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. What would you recommend for someone who has a pot that wants to put some flowers in it now that, that would smell good and just go to the garden center and get some good smelling, nice smelling?
Yeah. The garden centers are still going to have stuff coming in. They're going to have things in bloom. Yeah, we're a little early, although you will find mums now because there's some of these mums that are early bloomers. So
something
you could
that
even go
good.
To that. Yeah, I know mums don't. Most people don't think mums smell good. Something that smells good. Oh, I don't know. You know, that maybe even I'm thinking some of the herbs, which
yeah.
may not even be the flowers that smell good. It's the foliage or something.
No,
that wasn't a great answer, but
well, it's another idea. It's
another
sure.
idea.
Sarah in Cross Plains. Hi.
Hi. I have a rhododendron catawbiens, not sure
mm-hmm.
if that's how you pronounce it, that I planted in 2011. And then in the winter of 2012 to 13, we had very heavy snow. And it just cut out the middle of it. I don't know if it just, I can't remember if branches work or if it just, if it broke branches in the middle or if it just pushed everything out to the side. So there's a hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 2.5 feet tall. And when it blooms, the flowers are very pretty, but it's kind of ugly. And it's in a very prominent spot.
Mm-hmm.
What is there anything I can do? Can you separate rhododendrons?
No.
Or, okay.
No. No. You're kind of stuck with the way it is. I don't even think you could really prune it necessarily to bring that growth back in towards the center if it's not already, if you're not seeing it kind of fill in in the past couple of years. So this gets into that interesting category of, is it fulfilling its duty in the landscape?
It definitely is not.
All right.
So then you may want to think about, I know some people never want to kill a plant, so you could move it to a different part of your yard.
Where you don't see it.
Where you don't see it, or it's not in as a predominant location.
Prominent, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then put something else in there.
Okay.
Your other option is just to say, okay,
you're
we'll
done.
Recycle
Goodbye.
You into compost.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot. Yeah, appreciate the call. John and Boaz, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Great show.
Thanks.
I'm a fan of Mel's Square Foot Gardening, and I put a vertical fence up for my tomatoes, and the south side that faces the sun is doing good, and I've been pruning the north side away from the sun. But I was wondering, what did you recommend for maximum production as far as pruning?
I'm not a great fan of pruning tomatoes. I know some people swear by it. They think it's wonderful, but I think you're putting an awful lot of effort into it, and you're reducing the leaf surface, so I don't do it.
Yeah, you're reducing the leaf surface so that those leaves, fewer leaves to get the sun. And
right, so you have less production. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, yep.
Yeah, there you go. And Nancy in Salem, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Barb and Larry. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I last year I did the straw bale gardening and had phenomenal success. This year I had trouble finding the high nitrogen fertilizer, and so I used something that didn't have enough nitrogen, and my straw bales look terrible.
Oh.
So it's educational. I just want mm-hmm. to see if you haven't tried it, that I have to next year, I definitely need to find something that's a lot higher nitrogen to condition the bales.
Yeah, you've really got to get that breaking down in there, or else it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping I'm going to save these bales for next year.
Yeah.
It might work. And here's my question to you. I'm wondering if it's okay to use milorganite on vegetables. I heard that it can possibly contain have high metal content.
Yeah, I know a lot of people shy away from it. They'd much rather use that on vegetables and those kinds of things. There's other information I've seen that's not an issue anymore that it used to be. So this is that the product is fine, and I know there's certainly gardeners that use it. But to me, that's in the, if you're concerned about it, there's lots of other kinds of organic based fertilizers and soil conditioners that are people are much happier with.
Just as good. Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, that was my question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And Mike in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I use a lot of this wood mulch that the city gives away here on my garden. And I'm having problems with my pepper plants. And I'm just wondering if maybe that's the reason or...
So what kind of...
As I look here, I see some beetles on the plant, too. What do these Japanese beetles look like that I hear about?
They're kind of a shiny green.
Yeah, coppery. They're green, yeah. Bright kind of iridescent green and with coppery around their head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that looks like them.
Uh-huh.
But they wouldn't be the cause of too few peppers.
Yeah, is it you're not getting peppers developing? Is that the problem?
No, yeah, and the leaves are kind of shriveled and bent-like on a lot of them.
It's shriveled and bent. Yet yellowy color?
Like I say, I do, yeah, kind of. I do kind of mulch with the wood, too.
Well, we usually don't recommend, except you can use them between rows, but usually wood mulch is not the best mulch for vegetable gardens. And one reason is just because it just doesn't break down that fast. So I would use your wood mulch more around trees, shrubs, flowers, that kind of thing, and use other kinds of organic mulches in your vegetable garden. The other is, are you seeing actual pepper flowers at all?
On some of the plants, I've got peppers, but not very many. I do see a flowers.
So the pepper is one of those with these hot nighttime temperatures. You'll see the flowers, but the flowers will drop off. They'll abort. And so it could be that it's just an environmental kind of thing. The twisting and things, I'm wondering if there's something else going on. I was actually talking to Dr. Brian Huddleston, our plant pathologist, and he's saying he's seeing a lot of viruses this year, too. So, I mean, that's a possibility. So without seeing it, I don't know. You're in Madison. I would either take a sample and or pictures into Lisa Johnson at the Dane County office, and she should be able to help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. You could take some good close-up photos if you can't get over to the office and email them to Lisa.
Right. Clear photos. That's always, I get photos more now. And the problem is if they're not really sharp and clear, it's hard to diagnose it. But yeah, send them to the Dane County Extension office.
Thanks again, Mike. Barbara in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've put in a lasagna garden, you know, all the layers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, what are you supposed to do with it the second year? You know, after you've planted in it 1 year and you've got this pile of stuff there.
I would work it in, and that helps improve your soil. And if you would want, you could lasagna it again, depending on how good the soil is after that first year. I mean, part of it's just the idea is to improve the soil underneath it.
Yeah.
So just keep piling up there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but I would work it into the underlying soil, too, in the fall.
Okay.
All right. And there's... If you go online, you're going to see quite a bit of information on lasagna gardening.
Oh, yeah.
That'll help. But, Barb, you gave the right advice there, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I've ever had anybody ask me, what do you do the second year in a lasagna garden? But, that, I mean, the whole idea is to build up that organic matter on the top and then plant in that. So then I would work that into the underlying soil. And if it's still your underlying soil isn't so great, then you could lasagna the second year, too.
One more quick question. Amy on Facebook wonders if she can transplant first-year raspberry plants now, or could she wait until fall?
I'm not a fan of transplanting right now. Midsummer, hot, really kind of yucky weather, fall transplant, September.
Well, here we are at the end again, Barb. Thank you so much. Boy, the time always flies, doesn't it?
It does, and we have a great time, so thanks to everybody.
Barb Larson, our guest today. Barb is a horticulture educator for University of Wisconsin Extension. We have so many great educators in Extension, and we try to feature them on the show often. She works out of Kenosha County, and, well, of course, as the summer goes along, we'll have many, many more. We talk the lily leaf beetle next Friday on Garden Talk, and certainly all your general gardening questions. On Monday, the weather guys are back to talk about the recent floods and the heat wave. So I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.